for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 357 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, I get to talk with someone I met at the New York Comic Con this past year, Manny the Uncanny. And she has a book out called Orphney, which I got to see there. And I got it from Indie Planet later on, issue number one. We talk about the series, how it came to be, as well as how you can access this book. It's a really interesting story with lots of mystical underpinnings and lots of interesting characters. She has a plan for the series, something I always appreciate, and we talk about what other projects she's working on as well. An important update since we did this recording is that issue number 2 of Orphney is now available on Indie Planet. Just so you know that, you can get issue 1 and number 2, so go right there as soon as you get done listening to this interview. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Manny C. Price, known online as Manny the Uncanny. You have a comic out called Orphney, and I met you at New York Comic Con, you reminded me. How are you doing today, Manny?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. It's good to talk with you. You were in the booth next to us, you reminded me. I've been to so many cons this year that it's hard for me to remember all of them all. You know, because we were at Baltimore the week before. We saw you at New York, and so when I go through my books, I'm going like, which one was it? I can't remember which one it was I talked with you at. But anyway, it's good to talk with you. And why don't we go ahead and dive into the comic? It's called Orphney, as you told me. I'm always, the pronunciation of things always gets me. I'm never quite the sure that I'm getting it right. I wanted to call it Orphan, and I know it's not spelled that way. So I'm glad that you can make sure that I get it right.
Well, the etymology is similar. It's obviously Greek. It's for the word darkness. And I did not know, unless upon researching, that the word Orphney is the original word that most people know, the name Orpheus. That's the feminine form of Orpheus. And there actually was a nymph or goddess, probably another epithet of Hecate or one of the Chthonian goddesses, and it sort of just got lost to history.
Okay.
So I thought that was pretty interesting. So I kind of took that for the series, and it's sort of like a foreshadowing of what's to come in the comic. Mm-hmm. And what people are going to get a taste of is just the setting right now, mm-hmm. the atmosphere, before we get into the actual meat of the story.
Okay. So you're setting up things as in the first issue or so. Now, my understanding is you've got 2 issues out?
Yes.
Okay. So I know people always fault me because I don't get to this until later in the podcast, but how do you get a hold of Orphney if somebody wants to get it? I saw it was out on Indie Planet.
Yes.
Other places? I only saw one out on Indie Planet, though. I don't know if 2's hit there yet, but tell people how you can get a hold of this good stuff.
Well, I keep hitting up Indie Planet saying, hey, when is issue 2 coming out? I was told that it's going to be sometime in November, which is what I told everybody at Comic-Con. So I said, you know, at least you could download the first issue or order physically from me. But I do have issue 2 physically if you want to go to my Etsy link, which is etsy.com/shop/ManityTheUncanny. You can actually purchase issue 2 directly from me and signed. If you can't wait for
it. Okay, very good. Very good. So that's a good way to do it. While we're doing all the stuff I usually do later, how do people keep up with your work? Are you on Facebook? How does that work?
I am on all social media. I am on Facebook. I have my Facebook page. I have Instagram, Twitter, you name it, I'm on most of the social media. And you can actually go on my website to contact me, and it gives a list of most of the social media that you can hit me up on.
All right, and then the address for your website?
It's Manny, M-A-N-I, theuncanny.com.
Okay, very good. And what we can do is, I want to get, there's a description out here on Indie Planet, and I'm slowly, my computer is getting to it. I wanted to read that, because I always like when there's a description. Okay, here we go. A young woman must travel to the Dream King's realm to retrieve an ancient artifact that once belonged to her ancestor. And when I go on the comic, under chapter one, there's the debriefing. It's a quote from Artemis. The gods travel into men's dreams by way of a keyhole and exit from whence they came once their divine mission is complete. And, of course, that's got something to do with the story as we get into it. You were talking about that you had done some research and stuff like that. Is that where the story came from, or was this an idea you had before you got to the research?
Honestly, it all started with a dream, believe it or not. Hmm. It was a complete dream in and of itself. The dream was of me, my mother, and my sister, and in the dream, I was looking for what was called Psyche's box. Mm-hmm. You know, usually you hear Pandora or any of the other type of MacGuffin type objects, but for the one in my dream, for some reason, it was called Psyche's box. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in this mansion, and they said, they didn't say Hypnos by name. They said this was the home of Thanatos's pale brother. And I don't know if this was something that, because I've done research, I'm into, mythology and the occult and folklore and fairy tales and Brothers Grimm and such. I'm a minor scholar in that, and that's one of my areas of expertise. So maybe me absorbing this vicariously from other people, you know, lectures or whatever, it kind of got stuck in there, I guess, and it produced this story in my head, and it just laid out as a dream. And basically as the basis of the comic, not to give too much of the story away, but basically that was the setup, and we are on this quest for this item.
I have to say, I'm always fascinated by where stories come from, because yours came from a dream. There was a guy I interviewed in the UK who was watching a show about how you slaughter pigs, and he came up with a story called Slaughterman's Creed as a result of it. And I sat down and went, you know, if I watched a TV show about slaughtering pigs, I don't think I'd come up with a comic concept for it. So I was pretty surprised by that. I'm always interested as to where these things come from. You mentioned there was hypnosis involved in this. In some ways, this reminded me a little bit of like a hypnotic sessions and stuff like that. There's an angel involved, and there's a key involved. And I don't want to get too much into it. I don't want to spoil the story. But there's stuff that happens that I just feel like it could be like a hypnotic session. But I guess dreams and hypnosis are somewhat similar as far as that goes.
Well, that is the original name for, well, people have asked me, is this any way similar to Neil Gaiman's The Sandman? Mm-hmm. And it is actually derived from an ancient deity that's from, you know, Greek and Roman times, if not further past, and it's of all over cultures. But the particular one that I'm pulling from is Hypnos or Samanus, and it's more of a primordial, darker type of entity, something that is very abstract. Yes, he has a personification or a human, as you see as you go on with the story, that he has a human image that he presents himself, but as the story progresses, you're going to see that that is not his true form.
Okay.
And this is something a little bit more like in the Lovecraft vein, where it's very abstract, very monstrous, very nebulous, and something that you don't want to mess with. Okay, it's like a sleeping dragon.
Now, I have to ask, of course, how close to your dream did the comic end up being? I mean, is it
90%.
90%. So this is, if we read this, we might have a little bit of an idea of what kind of dreaming you do on occasion. I don't want to go that far, but maybe it's
pretty elaborate, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, that's good to know, because, again, comics are always fascinating to me as to where the stories and everything's come from and what they actually reveal about the person. I mean, the other guy, like I was talking about the Slaughterman's Creed, it had to do with you know, it had to do when it got down to it. It all had to do with you know, living up to creeds and things like that. What it was and stuff. And I was always fascinated. And I kind of it came to see that was important to him, and that's why he wrote that story that way. So I'm real fascinated by this because I've gotten a chance to read the first one, which I really enjoyed, and I'm interested to see where this goes from here. And when the second one shows up on Indie Planet, I'll be after it. So it's good. Now, a couple questions I got about the book. The cover is color, but inside is black and white. Does that fit the tone of the story more? Is that why you did it?
It's very intentional because the majority of people, we sleep in black and white. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I wanted to convey, just to show a bit more of myself, so to speak, I'm a huge fan of Jean Cruteau's Orphée. Okay. I think it's from 1957 or 1960. I'm probably off on the year. Okay. But he's the one that's responsible for the Beauty and the Beast 1933 film, mm-hmm. that Disney put their Beauty and the Beast reference and inspiration from, that they pulled from. So if you actually go and see his films, you can see that I pulled the feel, the atmosphere, and the look from there. Mm-hmm. And that was my inspiration for Orphée, for the style.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the credits, it says writing and illustration. And then it says coloring and layout, and that was Justin Wolfson, who was at the booth that was with you next to us at New York. Now, somewhere I was reading where the cover, he colored the cover, Justin did, or did he draw the cover? I'm trying to figure out how that worked. How did that work out?
All the work, all the artwork you see there is me.
Okay.
All the illustration, all the inking, that's me. All he did was the texturing, the lighting, the shading. He's the shadist, and he actually did the painting of the covers. I couldn't do that digitally. I'm more analog. I do fine art, oil painting. I'm starting to get the hang of it, which is why you can see that most of the comic is all inking. It's done by me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Now, I want to talk about the characters some. I mean, I always have to ask people if they're artists, and when they draw individuals, did you base what they look like or how they behave on anybody? Sometimes it's like I see some people are TV stars I see being drawn in, and sometimes it's friends. Did you pick any? There's the angel, and then there's Orphée, I guess, and then there's the dream lord in there. So are they based on anybody that you know?
Well, as for the characters of Jocelyn and Queenie, mm-hmm. they're actually, like I mentioned before, it was based on a real dream that I had.
Right.
So those characters are my sister and my mother.
Ah.
So any look or whatever that is derived for those characters is from them.
Okay.
As for Mr. Angel and for the main character, I have basically tried to create a original concept for the main character because that's a persona. That's the other thing that I didn't want to give too much away was that I didn't want people to get, and I'm trying to figure out how to do that tastefully, mm-hmm. that the character that you're seeing on the cover for the female, mm-hmm. that's not her real face.
Oh.
It's type of a persona, like this dream image that she has of herself or mask that she's wearing. And when you actually see her real self, I'm hoping that it will be a great relation to people, but I didn't want to get too much into it.
Okay. All right. We won't get into that then. The other guy, the angel, looks a little British to me somehow. When I look at his face, he looks like I see actors that are like him whenever I watch a British TV show. I seem to see that.
He's actually based on Leslie Howard, a famous 1920s, 1930s celebrity.
Ah.
I wanted to get that British-English look, like you said, because his backstory is going to be that his character is from the Revolutionary War, and he's a redcoat, and he was for the other side. Mm. And the whole thing is like his downward spiral into how did he become a ghoul? Mm. How did he become an undead person? And what is his motives? And basically everything about him is not as it seems. Everything is not up and up.
So he might not look like he really did when he was alive as well.
Yeah, I actually.
Okay, so we want more than that. We won't get into, but I just when you said that, it reminded me of what you said about Jocelyn. So I thought, well, maybe that's the case. All right, now let's get to the Dream Lord himself. His hair is all kind of sideways, which is really interesting to me. Talk about him, and you know, is he based on a character? Is he mythological? I don't happen to be familiar with him. What's his story?
Most of the descriptions that they have, like Homer, or you know, in the Iliad too, I think it's in Ovid as well, that they describe him as being pale, that his hair is disheveled, or that he has one wing stemming from the side of his temple, and there's actually statues showing this. And but the way that I saw him is the way that I drew him, mm-hmm. which was that his hair looked like it was underwater. Mm-hmm. It had this watery effect. There was these light orbs all around his head, mm-hmm. and when he smiled, mm-hmm. he looked like he had shark teeth. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I noticed was that even though he looked like he had eyes, he wore this laced mask, mm-hmm. and like all the other servants in the dream, in the mansion. Mm-hmm. And that was the other thing I noticed in the dream, was that a lot of the servants, and him included, did not have eyes. It was all flesh. It was all fleshed over, which if you think about it, if you are a primordial entity from the very beginning, eyes have no use. You have no use for them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's where the inspiration is coming from.
You have a full page painting of him in the comic. There's one, he's got like a little flower, a rose or something that he's got on. It's not his lapel. He's got like a, again,
it's a poppy.
Oh, it's a poppy. Okay. And it looks like a again, it's a British type outfit that he's got on there. And when I saw that, I thought that's because we don't see much of that character in the first issue. I'm sure we'll see more of him as we go along. But I was kind of interested the clothes and stuff like that. Are the Brits like a big inspiration as far as the what they look like, what the clothes look like in this book?
Again, he appeared to me in the dream as like an 18th century sexton or gentleman.
Okay.
And that was the dress that he had. When I looked it up, because I didn't know what he was wearing, I obviously looked it up to see research, like, okay, what was that he was wearing? Mm-hmm. It was sort of like reminiscent to like what John Milton would wear, or the poet, and most of the 18th century sextons, yeah, like a religious, a person who was in like a vicar or in the clergy. And I thought that was interesting that my subconscious would pick that.
Mm-hmm.
And the only, you know, summation that I can come up with, or reason probably why my brain did that, mm-hmm. But given that it is a deity and his domain is sleep, it would make sense that he is a god and he basically is the initiator or priest of the secrets or the mysteries of what he has to give for dreamers.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, so I want to get into a little bit of the story. I don't want to get too far into it because I don't want to spoil much. What I want to do in the very beginning, we see the angel standing on a shore, and down we see come Jocelyn. And there's an interesting thing. This is what made me think of hypnotic stuff, was that the angel kind of indicates that something has been installed in her. And this is where on the cover and other places we see a key being involved. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, or is that something that we you want to kind of save for people to read the book?
Sure. I just want to make clear that Jocelyn is one of the cunning women, mm-hmm. next to Queenie. Mm-hmm. The main character, her name is Victoria Phillips.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
And he's called Mr. Angel because it's a play on, it's actually A-N-G-E-L-L-L.
Oh, okay.
And it's also from our British beginnings of America. It's from our colonial history. So there's kind of a tip of the hat there going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you'll see as it unfolds. But the reason why he decides to have that particular name was it has to do with where he was born. Mm-hmm. And he kind of says to her later in the issues, like, it would seem fitting to call oneself. Yes. You know, my name is Mr. Angel, and that's all you need to know right now. And as for the wings that you see on one of the covers, the reason why he's depicted in that manner is the themes of using ink and bottle, because she's going to be using bottles of ink, where she actually uses in the dream world, where she smashes one and what I call scouts or figments. And she uses them as little helpers. And one of the things that I'll have Mr. Angel do is that he's going to smash one of the bottles and actually use it as the wings are made out of ink.
Okay.
In the dream world. So I thought that would be interesting to kind of do in the comic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry I got the name wrong. When I look at the book, it says Victoria right on it. I don't know why I latched on to Jocelyn there. But anyway, so talk about the design of the key, because that plays an important role in this book. Did you design that on a real key? Is that something you created? How did that happen?
Well, truth be told, I'm sort of pulling from Dunsany and Lovecraft here.
Okay.
The Gates to the Silver Key. And the design of it, I kind of based off of what the description was in his story, which was that it was arabesque. It looked kind of, you know, riddled and chewed. And it had this archaic quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it had Arabic writing on it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you actually look closely on the key, I've actually had a friend of mine do the calligraphy and send it to me how to say the key of dreams on for the key.
Mm.
So if you actually look closely, it actually is written on the key on the cover.
Mm. Cool. Very cool. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to look that closely at it. But yeah, it's pretty cool. I like all that good stuff. Now, the story reaches a certain point, and then, of course, we get to the end of issue one. And I noticed, too, that you have some text sometimes, like little letters. There's one that's got a quote from Homer on it towards the end, and then you go on and talk about the ritual was a success and the operation was complete. And I don't want to get into too much of that because it might spoil some of the story. But as far as that goes, that's kind of, I always like when people introduce text pages as well in there, because it gives you a chance to kind of dive into the text and find out what else is behind the story other than just the illustration. Much as I love the illustration, that's what makes a comic a comic. But talk to me about that. I mean, was that, why go to a text page as far as that goes? You know, like I said, comics depend usually on graphics. And yet here you are doing something a little different with the text. You're a writer in that sense. Have you written text novels and things like that as well?
This is my first novella.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, wow. So cool. So you're experimenting is what's going on. You're getting a chance to do some different stuff.
Yes, I'm foremost an animator. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of, obviously film work and such. And my other, besides, like I mentioned, I've the most that I've done, this is the closest I've done for fiction, but the majority has been, like I mentioned before, that I write for magazines, I write more scholarly stuff, and I'm actually doing a lecture at PCA in Washington next year.
Oh, cool.
That's where the writing aspect comes from. But this is my first work of fiction.
I like a little literary feel to a book. Sometimes and as much as I love action and superheroes and long johns, every once in a while I want something that's a little more cerebral in nature. And that could, you know, those pages when they happen in here kind of fit that need for me, which I really like.
The inspiration for that was from Washington Irving. I'm a huge Washington Irving fan. I really love his work. And one of the things that he likes to do is, like what you mentioned, he will have little poems, or he'll have little snippets in the beginning. And it kind of gives, and even Edgar Allan Poe, I think, does this as well, where it's sort of like a little clip and then they go into the story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the basis, or the setting the tone and atmosphere for the rest of that chapter.
Hmm.
So when I did that, it was to set the tone of, okay, this is what we're going to be focusing on for this chapter.
Hmm.
And for issue two, I did the same thing. I specifically, there's a poem from Edgar Allan Poe that I put in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
where he's, the poem goes that he's weeping because he cannot hold on to the grands of the sands of time basically going through his hands. That the time has gone through so fast that he can't even hold on a single one in his hands. And you'll see this in issue two, where Mr. Angel, because he's trying to install the Psyche's box into the vault, which is her head. And as he's installing this inside of her, there's this thing called the death taint, which he has because he's a ghoul. If he touches anybody human, he knows that they will disintegrate, die, or become diseased, or they'll get sick or whatever. He doesn't want to do that to his protege. She's too valuable for that.
Okay. So you answered my next question and was going to be about an issue two. So is that going to go through all the issues, this kind of format?
Yes. For every chapter, there's going to be an excerpt or a poem or sort of like setting the tone. And at the end of each chapter is going to be basically these letters that you're wondering, who are these people that are talking between each other? And I wanted the reader to be like, to kind of participate. And that was the other thing that I want fans to do is be forced to, you know, call in, email, and actually say, hey, who are these, you know, what's going on here at the end? It's like a homage to Alan Moore when he did the Providence series, because I saw that he was doing that and I was like, oh, that's so cool. I didn't know you could do that with comics. And that was another reason why I chose to do it that way, besides obviously tip of the hat to Washington Irving.
Okay. Now, the next question, of course, is this an ongoing? Is this a miniseries? How many issues do you have planned for this?
I'm planning like up to 6 or 7, and that will be the first book one. Okay. And that's the first story arc, which is the whole dream.
Okay.
And that's what I'm aiming for to do. And that's as much as I'm hoping to do, not bite off more than I can chew, so to speak. As I promised my fans, I am not going to just abandon them. I hate that when I see comics that I got into that were independents. And I really love indie comics. And one of the issues or problems that I see is that they'll get started, they're halfway through the story arc, and they're about to finish, and they're gone. I haven't heard from them since. And I hate that. So that's one thing I'm hoping, is that when I complete the series, it's complete. And I'm going to be upfront. For this one, it's going to be the dream. I'm hoping to be to 6-7 issues, and that will be book one. And then hopefully that will lead into, I do have an idea for book two, which has to do with the aftermath. That I'm wondering how much I can give away here. That once they're successful and they do have the artifact, now we're speeding up to present time, which is they're at the beach. He finishes closing the vault. He closes her head. And now it's the aftermath, which is that the police, quote unquote, or the guards of Hypnos are being sent, and Thanos are being sent to retrieve the artifact. And basically, so this way I'm not going too much into what book two will be, is that he pushes her through the threshold back into the real world to save her, and really not save her, but to protect the artifact, because he worked too hard to let it go. And basically him being arrested and his trial and tribulation once he faces Hypnos and his wrath.
Wow. Okay, so it sounds like book two has got a lot going on in that book. It's pretty good. So, okay, talk to me about the story, the whole story. I mean, okay, you've got volume one and volume two you've got in mind. Do you know how many volumes you've got in the whole story, or is something that's going to change as time goes along?
Right now, I'm just going to have the first two. I don't want it to be, because I want it to have a definitive beginning and end, and I want to be true to the characters, I want to be true to the story, and I don't want it to be like, as one particular Pulp Fiction writer said, I don't want it to turn out to be like a Tarzan miniseries where I'm churning out, you know, every week. No, I want it to be intact and beautiful, and when people finish it, the series, they'll be like, wow, what a ride.
Wow, that's cool. So now, you mentioned earlier that you do work on animation and stuff like that. Any chance that this might turn into an animated series or an animated movie or something like that?
If it gets picked up by somebody, that'd be awesome.
Because a lot of comics to me, I read them and I go, you know, this would be a great crime story. This would be a great sci-fi story. You know, it should be on such and such a channel, you know, to me. And I'm always looking at that. And I can't help it because I always think a comic is telling somebody, this is how you could turn this into a movie. Here's the layout. This is how what the screenshots could look like, all this stuff. And I think you're doing a good job on that. As far as this goes, I mean, it'd be fun to see this in black and white. You don't see many movies in black and white. That would be an interesting thing to see.
Yes.
It would be great fun to do that. So, okay. So you've got issue two done. It just hasn't hit Indie Planet yet.
I have the printed version if anybody's interested.
Okay. Okay. So, and how do we get a hold of you if we want to get the printed versions?
It's going to be on Etsy.com/shop/Fanny the Uncanny.
Okay.
And you could purchase it from that way, and it'll be signed by moi.
Okay. And it's Manny, M-A-N-I. I don't know. Some people still think Manny is M-A-N-N-Y. That's like a
colonel
one. That's not the way it is. So I want to make sure they get that straight so they can get it to you and stuff like that. So
my legal name is Emmanuel. Yes.
Okay.
So that's where Manny comes from.
Okay, very good, very good. Now, is your colorist and stuff, is he a longtime friend, or did you pick him up in order to start to make the story finished? How did you do that?
We are longtime friends, long time.
Okay.
I met him at Click3X when we were interning way back when, like 11, 12 years ago. We were doing motion graphics and compositing work and green screen stuff. We were doing, I think at the time, the E-Trade Baby commercial.
Okay, wow.
So that was kind of cool.
Wow.
But yeah, we've been together that long.
Wow. That's cool. So it's, if you look at this book, it's got a very unique style to it. I like the way the sort of the gray tones and all those good things as you were talking about before. I like the way that that happens. So it's really good. It's something different because, you know, I love variety and I love something different. So this stood out to me when I saw it as far as that goes. So
that is why I chose my friend Justin to do the painting of the comic, because if you actually look at his illustrations and you actually see his work, it has like a 1920s, 1930s feel to it. Mm-hmm. And even though most of the majority of his work is whimsical and revolves around animals, anthropomorphic people, that it just evokes that feeling. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a good mesh with the kind of work that that needs to be done and involved for Orphney. And especially since we're doing a film together, he's doing the backgrounds for The Unnameable, which we'll get into later if you like.
Okay, well, why don't we get to that right now? You're working on a film together. What is this, animation? It sounds like it must be.
Yes, it's an animated film. It's supposed to be 5 minutes, because there's no way we could do anything over than that. The voices are Sean Brainy and Andrew Lehman of the HPL Historical Society. Everybody knows them from the, I think it's Horror Theater. I'm probably getting it wrong. Please forgive me, guys. But they voiced Frank Belnapius Long, and they also voiced H.P. Lovecraft. And the story is about, the animated film is about two friends in Onset, Massachusetts, on vacation. They're in the cemetery together, and they're talking about the supernatural and the merits of it, and just having a very human moment together, because a lot of the stuff that you hear about HP and, you know, in the mainstream is he's this, and he's an alien, or he's a hermit, he's whatever. And I wanted to show people the more human side of him and this intimate moment between two friends, and that was what I fell in love with.
Cool.
And the film is also going to be in black and white.
Oh, cool. Well, black and white is a good thing. I'd have no trouble with black and white if it's appropriate for the story. It also saves you a little money as far as budget goes, which helps you get the movie done.
We were thinking more of a stylistic choice than anything, because it is set in, I think, 1932.
It reminds me of Calvin and Hobbes when, you know, Calvin comes up to his father and says, you know, I don't understand. Why are these movies, all these things are black and white? It's and the real world's in color. And he goes, well, you see, before such and such a date, the world was black and white, he goes. And I thought, boy, that father is going to get it someday. It reminds me of that kind of thing where the father would sort of, you know, you get a little bit of where Calvin is the way he is as a result. I don't know if you ever read the strip, but that was one of the great I laughed out loud when I saw that. I thought that was fun. But, okay, so that movie, when is that going to be available?
We're still working on the backgrounds. Mm-hmm. We already got started on some of the animation. We had hoped that we were going to be done this year going into 2019, but due to Kickstarter not being successful and plus Orphney. Orphney was the big energy, like, we just put everything into her. And we had to switch gears, and plus we were doing the tours, the cons, the book signings and everything. Mm-hmm. So that had to be put on the back burner because that requires time, money, animators, and energy. And so right now we're doing it on the side.
Okay.
And that's on top of freelance work and, you know, 9-to-5 job.
Mm-hmm. Real life gets in the way sometimes of comics. So, okay. That's good. I guess to keep up with your stuff, I guess Facebook and like we were talking before, the website and things like that might be the way to keep up with this movie as well as the comic. So we'll keep that in mind. Now, as far as books of the third book of the first volume, any idea when that's going to be completed? I know you've got a full plate. Any idea roughly when we might expect to see that?
You mean the trade for the whole thing, for all 6-7 issues?
Well, no, I was thinking the issues 1 and 2. You said when issues 1 and 2 are done. What about issue 3? Is issue 3, have you got any kind of estimate?
It's going to be due out sometime in 2019. I had hoped for January, but given we're now on hiatus, everything is winding down, everybody got sick, including yours truly. So everything got pushed back. So we might see like March or even April when that happens.
Okay. All right. Something to keep in mind. Write on our calendars and keep track of that stuff. Now, you were seeing it because I was at the booth next to you at New York City. You were talking about other appearances and stuff. Do you have any other scheduled appearances that you can tell people about right now?
I have one in January. I'm trying to remember the name of the con. And then Dark Side of the Con we're doing for March.
Okay.
And there's another one in January.
Okay.
But I can't recall the name of the con. But it's going to be in Brooklyn.
Okay. So we'll get to your website and Facebook and stuff. We can find out that stuff there if we get to that.
Yes.
All right. So that's good. So those are what you have coming. There's nothing else coming. It sounds like this stuff is going to keep you busy for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's good. It's good to be busy, creative and busy. There are a lot of creative people who aren't busy, and so I when I find a creative person who's busy, I say, good for you.
I'm very happy with the results. I'm happy that the response from people, especially new-timers, and I was very happy to hear from a lot of female fans and male fans saying that I kind of popped their cherry when it comes to comic books. So I was like, whoa, okay. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Because they said to me, it doesn't read like a comic. Mm-hmm. I could literally just look through it, and the dialogue, though it's important, the story unfolds as a movie.
Yeah.
And that was how I kind of, because I have the animation background, that was the kind of feel and evocative, you know, display that I wanted to convey to people, that they get pulled in by the visuals.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of comics people that worked in movies before. I don't know if you know who Jeff Johns is. Jeff Johns wrote Green Lantern, and he's done a lot of stuff. He's currently writing an update. Oh, need a minute? We're getting to the end.
No, it's okay. He's good.
Okay, he's good. I just want to make sure.
I have a 2-year-old, if anybody wants to know. His name is, get this, his name is Vincent.
Okay, well, Jeff Johns, anyway, he worked on the Superman movie with way back in the very beginning, and you know, and he has that same cinematic feel to when he writes a comic, and he always ends up with a great big cliffhanger at the end. So I'm always, you know, whenever I read, hear people that are into movies and stuff like that, I think you have an advantage over other people because you think visually, and that's the way that comic should think. So I think that's a great thing.
Thank you.
That's good. Okay. So, okay, I'm going to keep my ear to Indie Planet to find out when issue 2 comes out there so I can get buy that and download that. And, you know, I hope you keep up the great work. I think it's good stuff. And, you know, I'd like to see more
from you. We're also available at Anyone Comics in Brooklyn.
Oh.
We are also available. I'm trying to get into Strand. Mm-hmm. Anna Young from Gods and Monsters, I think the Acme Superstore in Florida, she's going to be having my stuff. I already sent her the first batch of comics. Cool. So people could purchase it in Florida if they want it.
Yeah.
But I'm really trying to push it out into the other stores. And we're also available in the UK at Orbital.
Oh, good.
In London.
Yeah, Gods and Monsters in the Orlando area. So that's super cool. Very good stuff. Well, man, you're doing wonderful stuff. Sometime maybe you'll have to clear a little more room to do a couple of other creative projects. But this stuff is great stuff. So I'm looking forward to seeing more from you, Manny. And you know, all I can say is keep up the good stuff and don't let reality get too much in the way. But you got to do it sometime. So, you know, I enjoy what you're doing. And so please keep it up.
Thank you. And nice turn of phrase there, keeping reality, considering the subject matter.
That's right. That's all right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's a wrap for this episode. If this weekend is a holiday one for you, have a great time. And even if it isn't, we'll see you next week. So until then, keep reading your comics.